Welcome to Your Business, Your Life with Matt DeFrancesco, your personal financial technician. Whether you've had years of success in your business or just starting out, Highlift Financial can help you create a vision for your business, life, and family, and align these for generational wealth. As they say, what happens in your life affects your business. And now, on to the show. So hello and welcome to Your Business, Your Life with your host, me, Matt DeFrancesco. And I'll tell you what, today I am really excited because I've got a fantastic guest who's got a ton of information that all business owners need to know. And so I would listen carefully. And as most of you know, I try to keep these podcasts to 25 or 30 minutes, but I have a feeling we're going to go a little longer with Michelle here. So, but anyway, the reason I wanted to bring Michelle on was that, you know, one of the big challenges I run into in working with family businesses, especially in the automotive repair industry, is that they don't have a plan when they want to look to transition their business and move maybe to a different part of their life. And the problem is most of these that don't have a plan in place end up failing. So that's where I wanted to bring on Michelle Seiler Tucker. So Michelle specializes in mergers and acquisitions. Her firm, Seiler Tucker Incorporated, has basically helped to sell over thousands of different companies in many different industries. She's got a process in place that has been highly successful. She closes about 98% of the deals that are out there. And something that really is amazing is that on average, she gets about 20 to 40% more on the sale than they've actually asked for. She's got numerous designations. I don't know if she wants to go into those. I'm not going to, because I'll be here all day. She's been a prominent speaker with some of the world's foremost speakers that are out there. And she's had author of the best-selling book, Sell Your Business for More Than It's Worth. And her latest book and program, which you'll see behind her, Exit Rich, is available now for purchase. So she's got a passion for wanting to help business owners to achieve the lifestyles that they want. And that's why I'm really excited to have her on, because that's what my passion is too. So Michelle, welcome to the program. I'm really excited to have you here.
Thanks, Matthew. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate being here.
Oh, no problem. No problem. It's exciting. So anyway, I kind of gave a brief synopsis of your bio that's there. You have, it's pretty amazing when people read through it, especially if they check out your website. But I wanted to kind of introduce you to the audience, and maybe you could give us a little bit of background just to let us know how you got to where you are now.
So yeah, that's a story, because you know, I didn't wake up one day and say, oh my gosh, I'm going to sell companies.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I did know though, as a little girl, I was going to be an entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. I knew I was going to really be my own boss. And I used to tell my mom all the time, I'm never going to work for anybody.
Right. Right.
And so I've owned many different businesses throughout my journey. I did get recruited from corporate America from a Fortune 500 company called Xerox. And as Xerox, my nickname was the closer, because every time somebody couldn't close a deal, they're like, get Michelle, she can close it. Gotcha. She can close everything.
Right.
And so within 6 months, Xerox took their best salesperson, which was me, and right, promoted me to regional vice president, okay, overseeing about 100 salespeople. And I realized right then, I'm like, Mom, what am I doing? I said I was never going to work for anybody.
Right.
And I ended up transitioning out of Xerox and started a franchise development, franchise sales, and franchise consulting company.
Okay.
And during that journey, I had so many buyers come to me and ask me for existing businesses. They're like, look, we don't want to buy a franchise. We want an existing business. Oh. And I'm like, you know, after probably 20 clients asking me that, I'm like, you know what? I should start an M&A firm.
Right, right.
And that was a little over 20 years ago.
Wow.
So since then, you know, I've been in this business a little over 20 years. I personally have sold over 500 companies.
Okay.
My firm and me together has probably done a little over 1,000.
Wow.
Pretty much in every vertical you can imagine. We're industry agnostic. So we've sold businesses in automotive, we sell businesses in financial services, manufacturing, distribution, healthcare, you name it, we've probably sold in that vertical. Right. And then I learned what Steve Forbes says is true. Steve Forbes endorsed my book, Exit Rich. Right. And Steve says 80% of businesses on the market will never sell.
Right.
80% of businesses on the market will never sell. And I said, gosh, if I don't start fixing these businesses and packaging them and getting them ready for sale, I mean, most business owners are not going to have a sellable asset.
Right.
And that should be a huge wake up call for most business owners, because it means you have less than 20% chance of success. Exactly. So that's when I really started fixing businesses, partnering with business owners. I partner with business owners, investing my time, energy, you know, core competencies, resources, money.
Right.
And I buy businesses and flip them. And I help business owners really build their business, you know, so that they can exit rich when they're ready.
Right.
And not become a statistic.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, and it's interesting because in my industry, you know, a lot of people want to go after business owners, and they go in and they find out that they don't have a lot of investable assets. And so mm-hmm. a lot of times the bigger firms kind of push them away because that's what they're looking for. That's what they get mm-hmm. paid on. But, you know, the biggest asset most of these business owners have is the business. Mm-hmm. And so mm-hmm. the question becomes, how do we monetize that business if we mm-hmm. need to have an exit plan? So I think that's really fascinating. And I really love the process you've developed.
Mm-hmm.
So
thank you.
One of the things that I am, you know, in working with family businesses, I always read the studies that said 70% of businesses fail in the first 5 years and 90 in the first 10. And when we were having our conversation, you enlightened me to some new information that's out there. So I wanted to see if you could expound on that and explain sure. what the significance is to that for business owners.
Yeah, absolutely. So when I did my research, when I wrote my very first book, Sell Your Business for More Than It's Worth, in 2013, I did the research and learned that 90% of all startups would fail
right.
within that first 1 to 5 years. But then when I did the research for Exit Rich, my latest book that just launched, I was flabbergasted to learn that the business landscape has actually flip-flopped.
Wow.
So it's no longer startups are at great risk. Existing businesses are at great risk, which means our economy is at great risk. Because if you think about this, there's 30.2 million businesses in the United States, employing over half the U.S. workforce. Small business is the backbone of our economy. We lose small business, our economy goes in the toilet. You know, there's really not a better way to say it. And what I learned is that out of 27.6 million businesses, those companies that have been in business for 10 years or longer, 70% of them will go out of business.
Wow.
70%. Mm-hmm. I mean, think about that. That's very startling statistic facing business owners, because it used to be, gosh, if you make it past 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, you're golden. You're going to be in business forever. Right. That's not the case anymore. You know, you hear the media talks about the public companies all the time. Toys R Us in business 75 years goes out of business.
Right.
Kmart, Giant Mart, Pier 1, Disney stores just closed up all their stores. Godiva is closing up 1,500 locations. GNC is closing down 900 locations. But guess what the media doesn't talk about? They don't talk about you and I. They don't talk about all your listeners. They don't talk about the private companies. These private businesses are exiting poor.
Wow.
They're selling for pennies on the dollar. They're closing their doors, or even worse, filing bankruptcy.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a huge problem in America. And that's why I wrote Exit Rich. And that's why it's so imperative to really work with a business owner to get their business in tip-top shape before they put it on the market, so they have a sellable asset.
No, that makes complete sense. And it's interesting, especially, you know, I specialize with the automotive collision shops. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times, you know, these guys are technicians. All right. They're mm-hmm. great under the hood, you know, great mm-hmm. at their developing their processes. But then when it comes to the business, a lot of times they're missing. And what mm-hmm. happens is that, you know, the second generation may come in, but usually at some point, you know, there's no family members that want to take over the business mm-hmm. and they're forced to sell. And the problem is that we're seeing a ton of consolidation in this industry, where they're predicting by 2035 that 60% of the collision shops will be owned by the MSOs, which are the large conglomerates, and only 40% will be independent. And they're selling them on pennies on the dollar, because they just don't know. They don't know how to value their business properly. They don't know how to make it a more lucrative asset for a buyer to buy. So I think this is a real, real problem in the automotive collision repair industry. Mm-hmm. So what I wanted to ask you is, what are some of the common mistakes that business owners are making when it comes to, you know, comes to building their business and making it a true asset that they can possibly sell in the future?
Yeah. Well, one thing I wanted to say based upon something you said a minute ago is that it's not just technicians, right? Mechanics,
right?
Collision technicians that have their head under the hood and not really focus on the business.
Right.
It's pretty much every entrepreneur in every industry.
Right.
So I want to give you guys a break.
Okay. I didn't. She will.
I will give you a break because it's not just you. It's really every industry, because most entrepreneurs work in their business, not on their business. Most entrepreneurs have created a glorified job in which you go to work at every day versus a business that works for them. Mm-hmm. And that's why 80% of businesses don't sell, is because business owners are not building a sellable asset. And that's just not the automotive industry. That's every industry.
Right.
So just to give you all a break there, but you should not sell for pennies on the dollar. You do have to get out of, you know, get away from the, what'd you say, from under the hood.
Yeah, up
and really, hood, really focus on working on your business, because there's no reason in the world you should be selling for pennies on the dollar.
Right.
And there are private equity groups or strategic buyers that will pay a lot more than pennies on the dollar for the right businesses with the right proprietary assets.
Right, right. Yeah. So you talked about the right types of buyers. I know in your book, you talk about the five different types of buyers. Mm-hmm. Can you maybe explain those to the audience so they have a idea of what you're talking about here?
Absolutely. So before I get into that, though, I kind of want to walk them through a path.
Oh, that's so good. Yeah, yeah.
Some of the number one reasons why businesses don't sell is because, number one, business owners don't think about selling their business. Like you said, they have their head under the hood. Mm-hmm. They have their head in their business. They don't think about selling until they wake up one day and a catastrophic event is facing them.
Right.
And that could be an internal or external. Internal is health issues, you know, partners disputes, divorce, death.
Right.
External is this pandemic that we've been living in for the last year and a half.
Right. Right.
So the worst time to sell your business is during a pandemic, it's during a crisis, it's during a catastrophic event. The best time to sell your company is when your business is doing well.
Right.
Also, owners get burned out. So they'll call us and say, I just can't take it anymore. I can't deal with employees. I'm going to kill them all.
Right.
And I can't take it anymore. And so they'll call us and they want to sell. But the problem is, the price that they need to actually be able to enter the next phase of their life is typically different than the value of their business.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll call us and say, look, I want to sell for $10 million and their business might be worth $1 million, you know, because they base the value on what they need to retire on.
Yes.
Or what they need to send 5 girls to college and pay for 5 girls' weddings.
Right. Yeah,
it's
exactly.
Based upon what they need, not based upon the value of the business. Right. So what we're trying to do is help business owners really think about their exit strategy from the beginning. Don't wake up one day and say, I want to sell my business. Actually plan your exit.
Right.
And if you haven't planned it from the beginning, start planning it now.
Right.
And what I tell all my clients, and we'll talk about in my book, Exit Rich, is a STGPS exit model. So let's talk about that real quick. It's like you're in Philadelphia. So if you want to drive somewhere in Philadelphia, what do? You pull out your phone and you go to Google Maps. And what's the first thing you plug in?
Well, where you're going.
Where you're going. Your destination.
Right.
Your destination. Business mm-hmm. owners don't plan to fail. They fail to plan.
Yep.
You have to have a destination. Like Steve Covey says, start with the end in mind.
Right.
You got to know, where am I going? What do I want to sell my business for? Don't wake up one day and say, I want to sell my business for this, because you haven't built that value.
Right.
So you need to figure out your destination. Your destination is your sales price. What do you want to sell your business for?
Right.
Let's say you want to sell your business for $5 million. And guess what, Matthew? Everybody gets hooked up on a number. Don't get hung up on a number. It's just a number. You can adjust it along the way. It's just a number.
Right.
But let's say you want to sell for $5 million. Boom, there's a number. Mm-hmm. Now the GPS exit needs to know what? Where you're starting from.
Oh, that's
where are you starting from? What's your current location? In other words, what's your current evaluation? What is your business worth today?
Right.
Now, I will tell you, most business owners, and this is every industry, not just automotive, they don't get a business valuation. They have no idea what their business is worth, which to me is financial suicide. Look, we go to the doctor once a year to get an annual checkup. We take our car to the shop to get an annual tune-up to make sure our health is good, make sure our car is good. But we don't take our most valuable asset, which is our company, and get an annual business evaluation.
Exactly.
It's financial suicide. Right. You need your evaluation done every year. And the reason for that is because there are events that increase valuation. There are events that decrease valuation.
Right.
This pandemic is a perfect example for that. In some industries, it really blew up their business. Some industries, you know, they tanked.
Right.
So you need to get a business evaluation every year, business evaluation checkup. Don't go to your CPA for that.
I was just going to ask
Align yourself with an M&A expert that knows how to evaluate synergies and knows how to give you the steps to take to get you closer to your desired sales price.
Right, right.
So let's say you want to sell for $5 million, and let's say your business is worth $1 million. The next thing you need to know is, well, what's my time frame?
Right.
Let's say you want to do this in 10 years. Okay. Then the fourth step is, well, who are my buyers going to be?
Right.
Now, notice, Matthew, I say buyers, not buyer.
Right.
Because I have clients that call me all the time, like, Michelle, I already have the buyer. You just need to do everything else. And I'm like,
right.
And they go, you don't need to market it. I'm like, nope, won't do it. And they go, what do you mean won't do it? I said, look, I got to come in. I got to evaluate your business. I got to look at your business on all six cylinders.
Right.
To make sure you're operating on all six P's. Your financials are probably a disaster, so I have to clean them up. Then I got to get all the data into the data room all to create due diligence. And the likelihood of that one buyer closing on the sale of your business is slim to none.
Right.
So then we got to start all over again. So you never want to put all your eggs in one buyer's basket. Plus, how can we create a bidding war with a party of one?
Right.
The reason I get my clients 20 to 40% higher selling price is because I create bidding wars. I bring multiple buyers to the table. So there's five types of buyers. The first time, 90% of buyers are first time buyers. So first time buyers are number one.
Right.
First time buyers buy small businesses. They buy coffee shops and pizzerias and things like that. And they'll buy automotive, but they'll buy small automotive shops.
Yeah. Usually one bays, you know, that's
one bays. Yep. Usually one bays, maybe two. So very small businesses. And then you have turnaround specialists. Well, turnaround specialists are buying distressed assets, getting in there and fixing them. And then you have private equity groups. Private equity groups buy two ways. They buy based on platforms and add-ons. Platform is, let's say they want to get in an automotive space. They want to get in a collision center business.
Right.
They won't even consider your business unless you have at least $3 million in EBITDA.
Okay.
EBITDA is earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization.
Right.
And so, you know, you might be listening to this going, well, I don't have $3 million in EBITDA, but guess what? Let's say a private equity group already has a platform in automotive. They will consider add-ons, smaller companies
for
under $1 million in EBITDA. So a private equity group could be your buyer.
Yeah.
And then the fourth type of buyer are strategics and competitors.
Right.
Strategics and competitors are typically the best buyer because they're buying synergies. They're buying something that will help catapult their business to the next level, like trademarks or patents or contracts or branding, you know, locations.
I was just asking that. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the last type of buyer is sophisticated entrepreneurs. These are buyers who are industry agnostic. They chase EBITDA. They chase cash flow.
Right.
Okay. So those are your five types of buyers. So now that you have your plan, you say, okay, I want to sell for $5 million. I'm worth $1 million today. I want to do this in 10 years. I know who my buyers are going to be. It's probably going to be a private equity group, strategic or sophisticated. Now you need to reverse engineer your plan and say, okay, where do my numbers need to end up? If I want to sell for $5 million, where's my gross revenues, my COGS, my operating expense? Most importantly, where's my EBITDA need to be?
Right.
Your EBITDA, your earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization has to be at least $1 million to get a $5 million price tag.
Gotcha.
Depending upon your proprietary assets.
Okay.
So then the next step in this model is to say, okay, what are the pegs, the strategics, the competitors, the sophisticated? What is their buying criteria? What are they looking for? What characteristics, what synergies will they pay more money for? And then you build your business to suit their specific criteria. It's kind of like when you go into business, Matthew, and you go, here's my widget. So let's say you open up a collision center. Your collision center is your widget.
Right, exactly.
And you're like, here's my target market.
Yep.
You know, I'm going to go after high-end cars. I'm going to go after personal injury, you know, the car accidents or whatever your target market is. You can't be everything to everybody.
Right.
So when you go into business, you define who your target market is. Exactly. And then you build your widget to meet every, you know, all their specific needs, your target market's specific needs, right?
Right.
Your business is your widget. Mm-hmm. Your buyers is your target market. You need to build your business, your widget, to meet their specific needs, because that's how you maximize value. That's how you get the highest sales price. Then once you figured all this out, now is when you build in the solid infrastructure and build your business on what we call the six cylinders or six P's.
Okay. Okay. Before we go into that, I just got a quick question that kind of popped into my head as you were explaining that. So for example, a lot of collision shops right now, they'll do any vehicle that comes through the door. All right. The buyer is looking to sell. We're starting to see that specialization, just like in every other industry, specialization is becoming more prominent, where the collision shop owners may be going to say, we only do trucks, you know, domestic manufacturer trucks, or we only do European luxury vehicles. And they may even get more specific. Mm-hmm. Is that something that you would identify in this process and then help them to transition toward where their best buyer was going to be, or maybe where their best niche was?
Absolutely. When we evaluate a business to look at a business, that's what we look at. We're looking at all the components of the company.
Okay. Okay. And, yep. And do you help like them to identify maybe where some of these areas are as you're kind of researching like this, you know, if we move toward the Euro luxury, we have a greater potential to get a higher sale value on it, something like that.
Absolutely. Like there's a company I'm working with right now that specializes in graphics.
Okay.
And they're installing all the graphics. I'm like, listen, that's not where you need to be. You need to be selling uninstalled graphics because that's where the money is and you don't have the overhead associated with it.
I got you.
So when I look at businesses, we look at what industry should you, you know, should you kind of pivot a little bit?
Right.
Should you diversify a little bit? Also, a lot of businesses get stuck in automotive too, is because they got one profit center. They got one way they get paid.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we really work with business owners to build those congruent revenue streams.
Oh, that's good. You know, because that's interesting. That's part of my process. And that's why when we spoke, I saw a lot of synergy that was there because your process is very similar to mine. That whole GPS model. I try to, you know, I sit down with the family and help them to come up with a family vision. What do we want to do? And then how does the business fit into that? And then, you know, build a financial plan out of that. And you're doing that with the business. It sounds
absolutely. Absolutely. And we sit down with owners too and find out, you know, what is their objective? Do they want to sell to their family? Because, you know, the days of giving your business to your kids are pretty much gone.
Yep.
Number one, you know, parents need to get paid for all their hard work.
Well, that's it. A lot of times that's their retirement plan too.
Exactly. And then number two, the kids, they're not going to respect it if everything's handed to them on a silver platter. They don't have a skin in the game. Plus, most kids don't want their parents' business anymore. Most kids want to go out and create their own masterpiece. They want to go out and create their own footprint.
Right.
You know, so less than 10% now businesses are actually transitioned in the family.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing? Isn't it amazing? And that's a real struggle. And especially
it's a huge struggle. I mean, we're selling a tile company right now and well, they're on the fence and we could sell this company for between $7 to $10 million. And the son wants to buy it. He goes, well, I'm not paying you that for it. Dad, I'll pay you $2 million for it. I'm like,
oh my gosh.
And the father said, what do I do, Michelle? I said, well, I want to sell it to him for $2 million. Maybe you can bridge the gap and like, you know, compromise in the middle.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
You can sell for $2 million if you pay me $100,000 a year, right?
Exactly.
And I don't do anything. So, I mean, yeah.
But it's very tough to transition your business. And here's the bottom line. If you follow that GPS exit model, rather you transition your business to your kids or sell, you're going to have a better business.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Because you're going to be focused on the end game. You're going to be focused on the $5 million price tag. What does it take to get there? You know, what are the numbers need to be? What's the infrastructure need to be? How do I build this business on these six P's, these six cylinders? And the bottom line is you're going to have a much better business that's sustainable, scalable, and profitable, right, whether you sell it or not. Exit rich is all about building a sellable asset.
Yes.
Not necessarily all about selling.
Oh, yeah. That's so true. I was thinking a funny story you mentioned about you working backwards through the formula. And I had a client, he had a precious metal business, and he did it for 40 years. And he finally came to me, he goes, "I've had it. I don't want to do this anymore. I want to retire." And he kept trying to tell me he could live on $5,000 a month. And I laughed at him. And then I called a CPA. I said, "Hey, so-and-so thinks he can retire on $5,000 a month." And he just starts laughing. And he's like, "Yeah, try $10,000 to $15,000 a month." So we did the reverse engineering on it to figure out how much, you know, we would need to sell the business. And I told him the number, and I didn't see him for like a week. And then I ran into him, and I'm like, "Hey, I haven't seen you. Where you been?" He goes, "Oh my God, I think you gave me vertigo when you told me that number." Unfortunately, we did work out a deal, but who knows, if I'd met somebody like you back then, maybe he could have got the 2.5, maybe even more for the business. I mean, who knows?
Well, and the thing about it too, is a lot of times sellers will come to me and say, "Hey, I want $2 million because they feel like that's what they need to retire on."
Right.
But that's not always the case.
Yes.
So I would be working in conjunction with you, Matthew, and saying, "Okay, let's reverse engineer this, because how old are you? 70 years. Okay, 70 years old. How long do we think we're going to live?" Right. And a lot of times when you run the numbers, you don't need as much, especially if you have a good tax attorney.
Yes.
You don't need as much money as you think you do.
Right. You know what? I tell people that all the time. It's amazing. It's amazing. And it's so many people have got to go into retirement and they're like stressed out. And all of a sudden it's like, they're not even tapping into assets. It's like we've structured things properly that, you know, they don't need as much as they think they need. So no, you're exactly right about that. So you've brought up the six P's twice. So
six cylinders, with the automotive theme, right?
Right. There you go. I like that. I like that. So explain to the audience the six P's, because I find this absolutely fascinating. So
the six P's is your infrastructure. You know, if you go to build a house, you hire a contractor. What's the contractor do? First thing they do is they dig deep, right? They dig really deep. They build a solid foundation. They make sure they put in the plumbing, the electrical, everything that they need, right?
Right.
The problem with a lot of business owners is because they're entrepreneurs, business owners focus on marketing and sales and how to deliver that product, right?
Right. Right.
They don't really focus on building a solid infrastructure. Mm-hmm. So therefore, the business is not sellable.
Gotcha.
And a lot of reasons the business is not sellable, we'll get into the 10, the mistakes that business owners make while we go through the six P's. I can kill two birds with one stone here.
Perfect.
The number one reason they're not sellable is because business owners haven't built a sellable asset.
Okay.
Business owners are working in their business. They are the business. If I pull that business owner out of the business, there is no business. That is not sellable. Buyers are not buying jobs.
Right.
Buyers are buying businesses. So you got to build the infrastructure, which is the synergies that buyers are buying. So the first synergy, the first P is people. You don't build a business, you build people, and people build the business. So that's the biggest mistake that business owners make, is because they have, entrepreneurs have this mindset that if I want it done right, I got to do it myself.
Yeah, I know.
That can't be further from the truth, because you're not good at everything. I'm not good at everything.
Right.
You know, you got to focus on your strengths, hire your weaknesses.
Yes.
Work on your business, not in it, and get the right people in the right seats.
Right.
And I always say, ask the who question. And this is for every industry.
Yeah.
You know, who handles customer service? Who answers the phones? Who opens the doors? Who handles accounting, legal, marketing? Who takes care of quality control?
Right.
Who's the mechanic? Who takes care of the cars? Who, deals with the insurance companies? I mean, the list goes on and on and on. And the clue here, Matthew,
right,
is you should never be next to the who.
That's right.
Because we're trying to build a business to run without you.
Right, right.
So people is number one. The reason I put people number one is because you're not going to get anything else done without people.
Right.
If you don't have any people, you have a job.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times, even if you have people and you're still the business and the business can't operate without you, then we still have a glorified job that we go to work at every day.
That's right.
Right. Exactly. I mean, I have many business owners come to me and say, "Michelle, I have never, ever had a vacation. Guy said, I haven't had a vacation in 19 years. That's not what we go into business. We go into business so we have financial freedom, better quality of life.
Right.
Free time.
Right. Exactly.
You know? So the people component is huge. I'll give you a quick example. We had a dentist call us the other day, been in business 50 years. One dentist, three dental hygienists. The three dental hygienists are his daughters.
Oh, really?
And he said, Michelle, can you sell my business? And I said, yes, because I'm that good. However, I'm not going to be able to maximize value for you. Right. I'm not going to be able to get you a high price.
Yeah.
And the offer, the deal is going to be contingent upon you and your daughter staying on for 2 to 3 years. And he said, well, honey, we're not staying. I said, well, then, honey, you're not selling because once you and your daughters leave, there is no business.
Right. Because
the clients will leave. Okay. Mm-hmm. Same thing with automotive. Right.
Yep.
So you got to make sure that you have a management team in place. Make sure that the business can run without you.
Right.
The second P is product. So remember when I told you 70% of businesses out of 27.6 million companies, 70% of businesses are going out of business after being in business 10 years?
Yep.
The number one reason for that is lack of aim. Aim is always innovate and market.
Mm-hmm.
Business owners stop innovating. Yeah. In every industry, business owners get comfortable. They get complacent. They're like, this is the way I've always done it.
I know.
So this is the way I'm going to keep doing it. And, you know, definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results.
Right.
So product is number two. Product is your product, your service, or your industry. Right. You have to ask yourself, is my industry on the way up or on the way out? Do I have an Amazon and I'm in my prime? And Matthew, if you have an Amazon and you're in your prime, that's when you sell.
Right. Exactly.
Or do you have a Blockbuster?
High low, sell high, right?
Or do you have a Blockbuster and you're about to go out of business?
Right.
You know, if you look at Toys R Us, they did nothing new in 75 years. If you look at Blockbuster had the opportunity to buy Netflix. They sat back and did nothing.
Yeah.
And went out of business. So your product is really everything. Because if you don't have a good product, if you're not in a good industry, you're not going to survive, right? And some industries die. So that's why you always got to innovate, always innovate. And ask yourself, what business are you in? You know, Amazon did this in the 90s, Matthew. Mm-hmm. Amazon asked themselves, what business are we in? And they said, we're in a book fulfillment business. We fulfill book orders. Number two question is, what is our secret sauce?
Mm-hmm.
What's our USP, our unique selling proposition? What makes us better than every other automotive shop?
Right.
You know, ask yourself these questions. And Amazon said, we do fulfillment better than everybody else.
Right.
The third obvious question Amazon asks themselves is, what business should we be in? Should.
Oh, right, right.
And Amazon said, we should be fulfilling products for everybody all around the world. And those three Amazon questions is what catapult Amazon from a small book fulfillment center to the multi-billion dollar worldwide conglomerate that they are today. And those three questions are relevant in every industry.
Right.
So, oh, yeah. And then also you got to make sure in product that you have congruent revenue streams. You don't have one. The reason why the restaurant industry, hospitality industry died during a pandemic is because restaurants have one way they get paid.
That's it. Right.
Patrons come in and eat or they take food to go.
Right.
They have no e-commerce business. They have no other way that they get paid. You always have to have multiple congruent revenue streams. Makes sense?
Right. No, it does. It does. And I think it's actually interesting. You talked about restaurants during the pandemic. I have a guy I know, and I've actually used him a number of times. He's got a catering business, and it was a food truck. And when the pandemic hit, he immediately started jumped on delivery, and he actually did really well during the pandemic. And I think the restaurants that were able to adapt to the pandemic, utilizing delivery, Grubhub, DoorDash, all of those things, were the ones that were able to survive. The other ones that weren't able to do that, or maybe were centered more on alcohol, where you had to be on the location to do it, couldn't survive. So I think it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Absolutely. So then that third P is process.
Mm-hmm.
Process will make or break a company. Process is kind of like exit strategy. Business owners are like, oh my gosh, we have a problem with that. Let's get a process for that. But process really need to be designed from the beginning.
Yes.
And they need to be designed with the customer experience in mind. Most business owners design their processes around the owner's agenda. Mm-hmm. Look at doctor's offices. What are their hours? Monday through Friday from 9 to 5. not ours. Right, we're working. So we're going to take off from work to go to the doctor's office, right?
Right.
And my husband and I own medical clinics. All right. So we have evening hours and Saturday hours because I know this. I know to design the processes around the customer experience. Right. McDonald's. If you ever want to watch a brilliant movie about entrepreneurship, go watch a movie called The Founder.
That's right.
Did you watch it?
I've watched it. Yes.
Great, 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 great movie. You know, back in 1950s, McDonald Brothers said, look, we want to start a fast food restaurant. We want to design our processes around the customer experience. What do we want our customers to experience? And every industry should ask themselves this question, every business owner. And McDonald's said, we want our customers to experience great tasting food that's hot.
Yeah.
30 seconds or less, fast, great, hot, fast. So they built the processes around that experience.
Right.
That's why McDonald's, you know, you can eat at McDonald's anywhere in the world and get the same experience, right?
Right.
So have you ever dealt with a business where, like, let's say a bank, a social media company, where you push a number and you got to push a number and then you finally get a person, you tell your entire story. They're like, oh, I have to transfer you.
Oh, I know. I know. That's the
And they
worst.
Never solve your problem. And they wonder why they lose market share.
Oh, yeah.
If you're losing market share in your business, it's because you're not designing your processes around your customer experience.
Yes.
Ask yourself three things you want your customers to experience and design everything around that. Makes sense?
It makes complete
sense. And then have it all buttoned up. Make sure you have your policy and procedure manuals. Make sure that you have, you know, your SOP checklist, because McDonald's has SOP checklists. They can fire someone and within 15 minutes have somebody running that drive-thru.
Yeah.
Because they have it all bulleted.
Right.
You know?
Oh, exactly. It's, you know, it's interesting because this piggybacks off a conversation, the last podcast I was recording, and it was a guy who was in the automotive repair industry, and we were talking about the independent shops. And, you know, for those shops that want to stay independent, they don't want to sell, they've got two options to compete against the big boys. They either try to undercut them, which we know how long that lasts.
Right. Right?
Or you create a great customer experience. And, you know,
right.
I, and my vet.
Amen. Yeah, amen.
My vet drives me crazy because, you know, I get the notice, you know, my dog and my cat need their vaccines. And so, you know, call the office to schedule and I call, can you please hold, you know, or it's busy. And like, I have online scheduling software like you have. I mean, and I'm just like, you know what? I'm ready to go somewhere else where I can just get online, look at my calendar, schedule the appointment, be done with it. Little things like that make a huge, huge difference.
I think that's what you're saying. That's why it's so important to go to your clients and ask your clients, what do you need? What do you need? What do you want? How can I make it easier for you to do business with us?
Right.
The company that makes it easiest for the consumer to purchase products and services, automotive, whatever the industry might be, is the company that's winning. Amazon winning because you can practically buy anything. You can practically buy a horse on Amazon and have it delivered in 2 days.
Oh, exactly. Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's
so you really got to get those, you got to get all that stuff buttoned up. Right. The other thing too, is on your management team, make sure that you have those non-competes, make sure you have those contracts in place and those employee handbooks, because buyers are going to look at that. Buyers are going to walk in. They want to see your policies, procedure manuals. They want to see your employee records.
Right. And we also, a lot of times, we'll put into place a certain kind of golden handcuffs for key people. And I think that's a really important thing that's a lot of times overlooked.
Yeah. Golden handcuffs are very important for key people. Sometimes, you know, sometimes the owner even gives them a little bit of the piece of the pie. Like, we're selling a business right now. And the owner's giving the CFO a little small percentage of the transaction just to make sure everything goes smoothly.
Oh, good. Okay. Interesting. Yeah. Interesting.
So the next P, are you ready for the next one?
I'm ready for the next P. Sure.
The next P is proprietary. So let me give you just a crash course in valuations.
Please.
So proprietary is huge. It's the highest value driver of any of the P's.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say your business has under $1 million in EBITDA. EBITDA, again, is your earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, amortization. Your business is probably going to trade, and this is pretty standard for a lot of different industries. Some industries get a higher multiple, you know. Some industries get a higher multiple. And SaaS gets a multiple of revenues. Everybody else gets a multiple of EBITDA.
Right.
So if you want to make a lot of money, go build a SaaS company.
Okay.
But at any rate, you know, if your EBITDA is under $1 million, you're going to get one, to maybe 3x EBITDA.
Right.
However, if your EBITDA is over $1 million, because this is the sweet spot, this is where everybody needs to strive to get.
Okay.
It should be your goal. When your EBITDA gets over $1 million, your multiple increases automatically. Then it typically starts 4.5, 5 and up, depending upon these proprietary assets.
Right.
So the more you have in proprietary assets, the more synergies you have, the higher price you're going to get for your business. There are 6 pillars here. I'm going to run through them really quickly. Number one is branding. The more well-branded you are, the more I can sell your company for, as long as your brand is relevant in the mind of the consumer.
Okay.
Is anybody paying any money for a Blockbuster?
No.
No. The most valuable brand in the world is, do you know?
Apple.
Oh, you got it right. Nobody ever gets it right. Yeah, you go, of course. Right. So Apple is worth $389 billion.
Yes.
That's just the brand. That's not anything else. And automotive, you know, your client, your listeners might be thinking, well, gosh, I don't have an Apple brand, but it doesn't matter. If you've been in business 20, 25, 30 years, and you're well-known in your community and you have brand recognition and name awareness, that's worth something.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And then the other thing is trademarks. But here's a mistake that a lot of business owners make is they go to GoDaddy. They come up with a name. They go to GoDaddy and they're like, yes, the .com is available. Then they go to their state and they get a state trademark, but they never check the federal base to get that federal trademark. So you could be in business 5, 10, 15 years and all of a sudden receive a cease and desist letter and you're out of business.
Yeah.
So you want to make sure that you get those federal trademarks. I know a lot of your shops, your owners might be saying, oh gosh, I don't know if I want to do that.
Yeah.
But you know, it depends. If you wanted to sell for $5, $10, $15 million, you need to do that.
Exactly. I actually did that with Highlift Financial. And we actually, we went through.
It's only like $1,500. It's not that much money.
It's not a big deal. It really isn't. And it gives you that protection, like you said. Yeah.
It gives you that protection because you don't want to, like, I mean, you literally could wake up one day and receive a cease and desist letter and you have to start the branding process all over again.
Right.
So spend the $1,500. Mm. Patents are very valuable. If you have anything in your industry that you have a patent on, even like software, creating software, some proprietary software, that's really, really valuable. Contracts are valuable. Now, I know there's probably not a lot of contracts in the automotive industry, but if you have any vendor contracts, manufacturing contracts, distributor contracts, client contracts, you know, those are very valuable. Buyers will pay more money for that, especially if you have reoccurring revenue. Okay. You want to make sure, because this is very important, you want to make sure you always have the transferability clause in your contract that says this contract is transferable upon a new entity, because 98% of all sales are asset sales, not stock sales.
Right.
So you want to make sure it's transferable. Databases are huge. You know, Facebook paid $19 billion for WhatsApp, and WhatsApp was hemorrhaging, losing money. So what are we talking about right now? We're talking about, you could have a database of, you know, 10 million, I don't know, high-end net worth people that can be retargeted and sell your business for a lot of money.
Right, right. Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Content, celebrity endorsements, all that stuff is huge. So when I work with business owners, I sit down and I help identify those proprietary synergies because a lot of times they don't know what they are.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. And so the next P is patrons. You know, this is your client base. And Matthew, in America, most businesses follow the 80-20 rule where 80% of the revenue comes from 20% of their clients.
Right.
Now, automotive could be that way too. If let's say that you're a collision center and you're dealing with insurance companies.
Yes.
And let's say 80% of your revenue is tied up in 3 insurance companies, Progressive, State Farm, Allstate. Right. And you lose an insurance company, 1 or 2 insurance companies, you can literally be out of business.
Exactly.
So you want customer diversification
versus
customer concentration.
Okay.
And then the last P, what all your listeners are in business for is profits.
Yes.
And everybody's like, Michelle, why do you put profits last? And the reason I put profits last is because profits is never the problem. Lack of profits is never the problem. Lack of profits is the symptom of not having the right people, not having the right processes in place, you know, not running on all 5 P's,
right?
You will lose money.
Okay.
If you're wanting all five pieces, like I have clients that come to me all the time and say, Michelle, I got a profit problem. I'm like, no, you have a process problem.
Yes, usually that's
now
what
you have
it
a
is.
Proprietary problem because you're getting sued.
Oh, exactly. Exactly. So just fascinating stuff. And I think we could go on and on, but I did want to touch on Exit Rich and explain a little bit about the book and the program and what's available there. Cause I think it's a fantastic value. And I think everybody should take advantage of it.
Thank you. So Exit Rich was endorsed by Steve Forbes and Steve Forbes says Exit Rich is a goldmine for entrepreneurs as they leave way too much money on the table when they go to sell their business. Sharon Lecter is my co-author who wrote Rich Dad Poor Dad with Robert Kiyosaki.
Who worked at Xerox?
Sharon Lecter?
No.
Robert Kiyosaki worked at Xerox. Yeah. So did the founder of Starbucks.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm in good company.
Yeah, there you go.
And so Kevin Harrington, original Shark on Shark Tank, wrote the foreword. So Exit Rich is just not about selling your business. I want to be crystal clear. The first half of Exit Rich is all about building a sellable asset.
Right.
Because if you don't have a sellable asset, you're never going to sell your business.
Exactly.
And so you can buy Exit Rich at Amazon. You can buy it at your favorite bookstore. But if you go to exitrichbook.com, for $24.79 plus shipping, we'll email you the digital download. We'll ship the hardcover to your doorstep. We'll give you a lifetime membership into the Exit Rich Book Club, where there's video content and me doing, different trainings and things of strategies and techniques that I've been teaching for the last 20 years. Plus, Matthew, we have documents. We have documents to operate your business, documents to sell your business. So sample employee handbooks, operational manuals, policy and procedure manuals. We have to sell your business. This is really, really valuable. Sample letter of intents. A lot of business owners have never seen a letter of intent.
Exactly.
Purchase agreements, due diligence checklists, closing documents. Wow. All of these documents will cost you over $50,000 if you try to recreate. I know because I spent the money because I tried.
That's right.
I drafted. And then we also have a 30-day free membership into Club CEOs, which is an entrepreneurship mastermind where we help business owners pivot and really ask those transformational questions so that I can build this sustainable, scalable, sellable business. Nice. Now, listen, if you go buy your Exit Rich at Amazon or your favorite bookstore, that's okay. Mm-hmm. Just email us the receipt, marketing@SeilerTucker, and we'll make sure you still get the bonuses.
Oh, awesome. Okay, that's great. Yeah. I didn't know you could do that.
Yeah, I can do it. I can do anything.
You can do it. I was just going to say, I was waiting for it. I kind of set that up on the tee. It was a hanging curveball.
I was trying not to.
That's okay. So, and so if somebody, outside of coming to me, if somebody is saying, look, I'm looking to possibly look at a transition down the road, I want to talk to Michelle. And like I said, outside of coming to me, how would they get in touch with you?
So they can go to SeilerTucker.com. That's our main website, SeilerTucker.com. Okay. Our phone numbers are right at the top of the website. They can call us and we can work with you on selling your business now. Or if you're not quite ready and you need to build your asset to sell, then we have a Road to Exit Rich program too.
Okay. Awesome. Awesome. So this is just fascinating. We could just go on and on with this, Michelle, but in the interest of time, I'm going to close this out, but I really appreciate you coming on. This is gold. This is absolute gold. And just any business owner that is listening to this, I think you need to take to heart the things that Michelle told you and start to look at some of these processes and start to design that strategy that she talked about, that GPS strategy. So like I said, that's what I do with my clients. That's what she does with hers. Again, Michelle, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Matthew. Thank you for having me.
No problem. And the last thanks goes to you, our listening audience. Thank you so much for listening to Your Business, Your Life with your host, me, Matt DeFrancesco. If you've not subscribed to the podcast, please click on the subscribe now button. And that way you can automatically get downloads to the latest episodes that are coming out. And also it's a very easy way to be able to share this podcast with your friends and family. And also whatever platform you're on, if you love this podcast, please give us a 5-star review because that way we can get out to more people. So again, thanks so much for listening. And from me and everyone at High Lift Financial, make it your best day every day. And we'll see you again next time. So take care and God bless. Hey, I really want to thank you for listening to the Your Business, Your Life podcast. If you want to be notified when new episodes become available, click the subscribe button below.
The information covered and posted represents the views and opinions of the guest and does not necessarily represent the views or opinions of High Lift Financial. The content has been made available for informational and educational purposes only. The content is not intended to be a substitute for professional investment, legal, or tax advice. Always seek the advice of your financial advisor or other qualified professional with any questions you may have regarding your business or personal planning. DeFrancesco Financial Concierge, LLC, DBA High Lift Financial, is a registered investment advisor. Registration with the United States Securities and Exchange Commission or any state security authority does not imply a certain level of skill or training.